Hello. I hope you are so far enjoying this great conference. My name is Maya Strelar-Migotti. I am a very proud member of Watermark since 2010. I'm also on the board of Watermark. And I am very, very happy that 3 years ago, when we at the Watermark board started discussing, are we going to have a big conference for women, that we decided yes. And then last year was our first. This year is even bigger than last year. We had 5,000 participants last year. This year, 6,500, all tickets sold. This is fantastic. This tells us that we are living a moment where there is a high awareness of need that women of this part of California stick together, learn from each other, and also network. I am very proud to host this panel today. The panel is called Leading with Authenticity. And I work at Marvell now. I am one of executive vice presidents, and I'm also interim co-CEO of the company. And I am very happy to have this opportunity to learn even more how to manage corporate happening, learn and evolve. And also I have a great opportunity that through my career I was looking, what does it mean being named authentic leader? We all have to be a little bit of copycat. We have to learn from good and bad, from the people we meet in our lives, from our bosses. We have to learn what's good and repeat that. We have to learn what's bad and not do that. I'm looking forward to this panel. And I also want to say that this great conference is not the only thing that Watermark is organizing. We are having 50 events every year. If you want to join and try, we have special offer of $99 to join and see if this is something for you and for your organization. So please check what we are offering. And now, let me introduce Trudy Bourgeois. Trudy is going to be a moderator of this session. Trudy will tell more about her. There is her book down there, so who is interested, Trudy can sign on her book. And a very, very famous, very strong in creating high-profile leadership in a companies globally. So please welcome Trudy Bourgeois.
Thank you so much. That was so nice of you. Let me just help you down. You're so welcome. Good morning. How are you guys doing? It's a good day to be a woman. Woo-hoo! Yeah. I'm really thrilled to be here with you. I was here last year at the inaugural event, and it was so cool. And so I just hope that you are being intentional and that you're going to get out of it everything that you need to create a breakthrough for yourself. I mean, that's what this experience is all about, right? I would sum it up into one word, empowerment. And it's time for women to find their voices and to use them to say to the world, I am a woman, hear me roar.
Some of us understand that reference.
So in a minute, I'm going to invite our esteemed panelists to come up and we're going to have a great conversation. I'm just going to spend a few seconds teeing up why you want to be you. Right? I mean, that's what authenticity is about, showing up and being who you are. Now, that does not mean that, you know, we show up and we say, I don't do details. We don't get to do that, right? We get to be who we are authentically, but everything that we do must allow us to add more value. And so as we have this conversation today, I really want you to have in your head this framework of how can I take who I am as a woman that's smart and has gifts and has talents, how can I use that to drive better business results? At the end of the day, you guys, that's what we all get paid to do, right? We get paid to drive better business results. And you should be very proud of the fact that you happen to be among the demographic that is growing in terms of penetration of the workforce, that is $15 trillion, that's $15 trillion globally in terms of buying power, that we influence 85% of every purchase made in the United States of America. Really, that's 100%, but they're just, I think, confused. We have so much to give, and yet the research is pretty substantive in terms of saying that we don't use our voice. We shy away rather than demanding that we be respected and demanding that we be valued. And part of that is because we've been socialized as little girls to go along and get along and be nice and be, you know, like that. All right, so that's all good. You know, that's what grandma knew to teach us and that's what mama knew to teach us because they had never been in corporate America before, right? And now we're in corporate America, and let me tell you the magnitude of the responsibility that we must embrace. Every decision that we make relative to saying to the world, I am woman, hear me roar, affects generations to come. So today's conversation is not just about a breakthrough for everybody who's sitting in here. Today's conversation is about how we can become more courageous in paving the way for generations to come. Now, I want to be able to offer you challenges. Could you give me permission to give you some homework? Would that be okay? Y'all sound confused. Okay, that would be a yes. Yes, right? Thank you. So one of the homework assignments that I'd like to give you as I just spend a few minutes framing up is this. We need to learn how to support other women. We don't do a good job across race. We don't do it. Across generation? No. What baby boomers do with generation, particularly for millennials, you know, on Friday afternoon at 5 o'clock, we say, my day is just getting started. And the millennial says, well, you have fun with that because I'm out. And we go, you snotty-nosed little brat. You know, you just want everything given to you, right? By the way, baby boomers, we created those millennials. Just saying, in a spirit of love, we did that, right? And then across race, we don't have the courageous conversation, right? We don't have that conversation. And so I love that this topic is so appropriate and relevant for today's environment. But I really want you to leave, the panel and I together want you to leave committed to doing something different, right? It's not enough to come to a conference like this and get sort of pumped up and, hey girl, I haven't seen you. You meet people that, you know, you work with, you never even knew you work with them. That's all fine and good. Or I like your shoes, or I like your outfit, or your hair looks good. Or, you know, we like to do that kind of stuff. Okay, all that stuff is good. But the challenge is for us to leave committed to doing something different. And so I want to also just acknowledge the brothers that are in the house. Can we have the brothers stand? Stand, my brothers. Go ahead, rock on. Rock on, rock on, rock on. Woo-hoo! Okay, we need you, and you need us. For businesses to thrive in this marketplace, we need to borrow the good stuff from the male leadership style and the good stuff from the female leadership style. And we need to create a new leader that is transparent, that does not like hidden agendas, right? That is aware of their own biases and how those biases limit. We need to be intentional about building authentic relationships across difference. We need to be on point when it comes to saying we add value because the shopper is a consumer, right? Even if you're an ingredient company, you always have an end user. We all have an end user, right? So there are wonderful things that we can learn from the male style of leadership. We applaud you, and then we say, okay, you screwed it up. In a spirit of love, we say that, right? Because you know, part of that's real, really, really true. But part of it, you guys, that I believe that we need to learn from men, men are very authentic. And they offer no apology for it, right? They don't walk into a room like this. So sorry. And slither into the chair. right? They don't do that, do they? We do. When a man is late, he walks in and he says, obviously, I was at another meeting. Why don't you just give me a 10-second debrief and let me calibrate with you? That's what he does, right? And that's his authentic style. But he doesn't apologize for it. So we want you, if you don't remember anything else from what our conversation is about to be, don't apologize. Don't apologize. And the second thing that we would ask you to do is to find a woman here at the conference that you know the least and go up to her and say, "Hi, my name is Trudy. I'm a woman, you're a woman. How can I help you?" Right? We need to start extending the olive branch. Then the third thing that I would ask you to do as I gear up now to introduce our esteemed panelists, I would ask you to go home and talk to your children. Not just your female children, not just your little girls. We need to raise men who value the contributions of every citizen on the face of the planet. Can I have amen? Yes. You know, I'll tell you a quick story before I extend the invitation for our panelists to come up. So a friend of mine, she's a SVP at PepsiCo. Her name is Trish, and she's given me permission to tell the story. But she had one of those teachable moments, and it was when Patricia Arquette accepted her Oscar and used her time to talk about equal pay, right? And so her sons, she has two little boys, young boys, you know, like 8 and one's 10. Her sons are like, well, what's the big deal? Why is everybody clapping, Mommy? I mean, why are you jumping up and down? And she realized in that moment that she'd never really had the conversation about equality with her children. And so she said, "So baby, imagine that you prepare for a test and someone else, maybe a female, she prepares for the test just as hard as you prepared for the test. But let's say that they give the female an A because she's a female and they give you a C because you're a male." And the little boy said, "That's not right." And then Trish said, "No, son, it's not right. But that's not what happens to men. That's what happens to women." And so she said that they've been having this ongoing dialogue about using your voice and standing up for equality. And so I just invite you guys to really in your heads and in your hearts to ask yourself a question, a series of questions. Am I being paid fairly? Do you even know if you're being paid fairly, right? If you don't, you need some friends in HR to help you figure that out, right? Do I know how to negotiate for myself? Am I in a position and I think that I am not able to be authentic? Because if you're there, you need to either fix that situation or you need to get a new job. And your health actually is connected to it. I mean, studies are pretty profound now that when you're not authentic, your blood pressure actually goes up. Your heart rate goes up. The stress level with the endorphins that are released, the negative ones, your stress level goes up. So imagine you go walk around all day long trying to be a contortionist. Do this, right? You're never at your best. You are at your best when you are you. That's when brilliance really comes to bear. And so we are about empowering you to let your brilliance shine and create that breakthrough that fulfills your every desire personally and professionally. So that's the invitation that we're going to put before you. And now, with no further ado, we have got three women who have been there, done that, and are doing it. I mean, doing it in a bold way. And they're going to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. I will share the good, the bad, and the ugly. I will be the first to tell you that when I was in corporate America, I was not authentic. You know how I knew? I could cuss as good as the guys. I could go out on the golf course at 7 by 8:30. I would have thrown back 2 buds, right? I really could. I could do things politically that were not aligned with my values, but I knew I was in trouble when I started scratching my legs as if I was going after something. My husband was like, "Trudy, what are you doing?" I had assimilated, I had become a black female in a white man's body. I'm telling you the truth. So I don't know if that's your story. All I know is that we want to ensure that you walk boldly and proudly and say, I'm woman, hear me roar. So let me do my due diligence and let me invite up to the stage with me, Miss Jenny Dearborn. Rock on, girl. So Jenny is the Senior Vice President and Officer at SAP. Thank you very much. Have
Thank
a seat.
You.
Next joining us is Ms. Gail Evans. And Gail just recently joined Mercer as its Chief Information Officer. Rock on, rock on. Thank you, Gail.
Women in tech.
I'm telling you, she's creating a new narrative. And last but not least is a lady that I've actually known and we reconnected as a part of this process. Bad sister, Kendall O'Brien. And listen to this. Kendall is Johnson & Johnson's Vice President of Finance and CFO for the Office of the Chief Scientific Officer. Okay, did I say we had some powerful women that are going to tell us stories? A round of applause. Okay. So this is the way that we're going to do our engagement today. I'm going to have an opportunity to speak to each of the women individually, and they're going to rotate, and then I promise we will have an opportunity for 15 minutes for you guys to ask questions, right? But if the spirit should move you before the 15 minutes, use your voice. There are mics there. You can come up and you can say, that strikes me as something that blah, 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 and then we will stop and make sure that we give you what you need. And then after each of the conversations, the mini conversations, I will offer practical applications, ways that you can leave here and take the homework back to your work so that you actually do create the breakthrough, okay? All right, well, you know, we had an opportunity to chat, and you have obviously accomplished a lot in your life, but you told me that you think that this space of authenticity is rooted as a foundation for trust. Why is that so important? Why should we care about that?
So it is challenging as a leader to build followership if people don't know who they're following, if they don't trust who you are as a person. And so it's incredibly important for you to be your true self mm-hmm. so that people can see behind any kind of mask or, you know, veil that you're putting up, and people can learn to truly trust you because they truly know who you are. The best leaders throughout time have been the ones who have been the most authentic for mm-hmm. good and for bad reasons, right? Mm-hmm. You know, but they are they truly let their selves be known, mm-hmm. and that builds trust mm-hmm. in followers.
I think she's absolutely right, and I would just really, from a practical standpoint, ask a question. How many of you have captured what you believe, your leadership principles, what drives you? How many have that down on paper? Okay, a couple. I would really encourage all of us to know what drives us, right? Because in being vulnerable and showcasing who you are, to your point in establishing that trust, you've got to be willing to tell the story of the good, the bad, and the ugly. So you have experienced a lot of success, and you know, your job right now is to help employees be more effective, more productive, right? And so what do you think is the number one barrier that holds women back from being authentic?
I think it's the research shows, and certainly in my experience, that it's a lack of confidence mm-hmm. and that women feel like they need to be themselves in someone else's body, like you said before. Right. So they see the examples, majority of which are men, and they don't see role models at that leadership level that reflect who they think of them as themselves. They don't see the women, they don't see the minorities, the ethnic diversity in those leaders, and so they think, I need to be that guy in order to be successful. So then they start putting on all of these barriers and acting like something that is not true to themselves.
Right. And it so easily happens to all of us, right? I mean, we want to be accepted, we want to be welcomed, and so we start doing things, to your point, that really aren't align with our values and our belief systems. And part of it is the culture of the organizations that we work for, right? So how do we go about developing this confidence that you're talking about? I mean, I know in Sheryl Sandberg's books and other books, people have talked about developing confidence as for women. I've talked about it in the books that I've written, but I'd love to hear your thought process.
One of the things that I circle back to with women's groups that I work with is around personal branding, because there's a nice steps that you go through in the personal branding process that helps you be that authentic, true leader or just, you know, person that shows up in the workplace. And it starts with, you know, what do I value? What is important to me? What is my purpose for being here? Mm-hmm. How do I reflect that every day that I show up in the workplace, in my actions and my behaviors, my conversations, my communications, how I dress? Branding is so much more than just what you see. It's everything that about your person.
Right.
And so are you being authentic and true to that true self, to
right.
your values, to your mission, to your objectives as a person? And are you reflecting that every day that you show up in the workplace?
Okay. Excellent counsel. All right, by show of hands, how many people have a written vision statement for your life? Okay, every time we ask the question and you can't respond, that becomes what? Homework assignment, that's right. How many of you have a vision statement for your professional side? By show of hands. Okay, so if you don't have these statements, you have to do the work. You gotta step back and get quiet and think about, what am I doing here? How am I showing up? How many of you have a branding value proposition?
Personal brand.
A personal brand value proposition. Okay, those are four low-hanging fruit steps that you could take immediately to get in touch with, am I showing up the way I want to show up? But you got to know how you want to show up before you do it. So let's commit to spending the time. You can do it in a partnership with each other, or you know, you can do a series of simple exercises, and you could just start with, what would a perfect day look like? If I were authentic and it was a perfect day, how would I be viewed by myself first and then by others, right? So thank you very much. We're going to pass the seat.
Absolutely.
And get started on Miss Gail.
Okay, so we're going to do a little musical chairs.
Musical chairs, right, musical chairs. Gail, thank you so much for being here. I mean, you've just been with Mercer, you said, just a short amount of time.
90 days.
Incidentally, Gail and I were comparing notes just a little while ago, and we were talking about a new report from Mercer. If you have not seen this report, you need to get it. The report is about when women thrive, business thrives. So please, I got to give a plug.
You always. Know.
When women thrive, business thrive. And if you log on, you can sign up for the pushes. But this morning, it's report, this is like a pulse. It said this, gender diversity quick pulse. 67% of employees say that their organization is not on track. What about that?
Is that surprising?
No. And why do you say, is that surprising?
I don't know, in my career, it's been, early in my career, I thought I just needed to be good first. You know, let's, and be good at something, right? So I would get I would go after the most difficult projects ever and nail it. Because I felt like I had to. But then as the years progressed, I thought, well, I'm showing up, I'm nailing it, I'm not getting promoted. Something's wrong with this picture.
Yeah.
And I wasn't feeling good about myself because I thought other people in the room were much more smarter than Gail. And I'm not even sure why, because definitely my mother did not raise that person.
Mm-hmm.
Right, that was showing up. And so, you know, as I began to be, and then being in technology, it was mostly white males who were very confident, very arrogant, and here I am, and I just want to show up, make a good living, and feed my kids. So, you know, as I progressed in my career, I became more and more aware, being in tune with what was happening around me. See, the difference is, if you're there and you're not paying attention. What do they call it? Your emotional intelligence.
Yes. Mm. Uh huh.
Some of us don't have that. And yeah. if you don't know what that means, you probably should go. You know,
I just say some people
Google
forget to take
it
their
something.
Medication.
Take their meds.
People forget to take their meds, and then they come to work. I mean, it's crazy. Yeah. And they're crazy, sorry.
So when I began to just pay attention of what was around me and allowing myself to be me, the world changed for me. But I had to give myself
permission
and be okay with the consequences mm-hmm. of that. So in difficult conversations, I would never, ever question my boss, ever. And I never knew why. It's like, why? He's wrong. Is there a way for you? is there a way for you to just have this conversation without, you know, in an easy way?
Right.
And I never would. But, you know, as I began to be more confident, and bringing myself to work. I'm a humorous person. I like to have fun.
Yeah.
You know, you're not messing with my kids, so it's all just business.
Yeah.
And so let's have some fun. Let's be real with each other. Let's deliver value to our customers and our stakeholders and keep it real. Mm-hmm. As long as we can do that and respect each other, we will be a profitable business. And here's another plug for Mercer, and that is what I found at Mercer.
Wow. So another question for the audience. So how many of you, when you took your job, wherever you are now, said to the hiring manager, so this is how I work best? How many people did that? Okay, a few more than the first go around. If you've never done that, then we're expecting someone to read our minds. And that's not fair. Right? Because I can't, you know, I need to check myself and say, look, I really work better when I have clarity of the expectations and I have a deadline and then let me go. Versus, you know, someone breathing down your neck and you're, you know, at home. We don't usually, say these things out loud at work, but we go home at the dinner table and we go, you know what, those people are getting on my last nerve. How many people know what I'm talking about? Yes, right? And then, you know, before long, we're in the bathroom brushing our teeth. We're about to get the blood on it. I can't stand that person. And we're talking to ourselves in these negative connotations, but it's because we haven't used our voice.
That's
so
right.
How did you convey it's a new day, a new person, a new time?
First of all, I became financially secure.
Amen. I can walk.
I can walk out of here and I'm good. Right? That is freedom. So I encourage you, get that freedom.
Amen.
Because it's freedom. It is a new day.
Yeah. I said earlier in the panel before, we're all hooked on the drug, and the drug is called cash. It's money. And it is freeing when you don't worry about being responsible for paying your house note or college tuition or, you know, school tuition or whatever.
I had a mentor that said, Gail, you must get that financial freedom because it will weigh you down.
That's good.
And I thought, well, I like big, nice things and, you know, expensive homes and all that. But it didn't register till later in my career. So I first got that freedom, and then I got up enough nerve to question the first arrogant male I have ever questioned in my career. Was very, very arrogant, very, very confident, and he had a big voice.
Took up a lot of space.
Woo, the whole room, right? and I knew he was, but I did not disrespect him.
That's good.
Because you have to maintain your own values. And I have a moral fabric that came with me to every job that I will never compromise. But he was so big in the room, he was wrong. He opened a door for me. Mm-hmm. I eventually got his job, too. It was really good.
Oh, wow.
he opened the door for me, and I was able to take him down a train of thought where at the end he had no other option but to say, Gail, we need to get together and have coffee because I believe you're on to something. Oh, really? I believe I'm on to something, too. And when that happened, I was able to be respectful. I was able to share my knowledge and share my strength in a conversation that before I would never do. And I wasn't an executive at that time. In fact,
you were a middle-level manager?
I was a mid-level manager, you know, leading an entire team twice the size of the person with the big person in the room.
Right.
And he was an executive and I was not.
Awesome. Thank you very much. Okay, as we make this transition. All right, so what can we take away from what Gail just said in terms of practical application? First and foremost, deliver the goods. Okay? You cannot do the things that you'll hear, not just in this panel, but all the panels and all the keynotes. You cannot step out if your stuff is raggedy. Okay? If you're not a high performer, you have to become a high performer. So get the support that you need to be viewed as stellar. When you're viewed as driving better business results, it gives you a little grace, right?
Yep.
So in your particular case,
right.
You know, he could not dispute the fact that you were talking about something that was going to help him to drive better business results, right?
Okay.
So we have to make sure that we set ourselves up for success. So before I start with Kendall, let me just give you a couple of other assignments. This is April of 2016. You should have set your 2016 objectives by now. If you haven't, you're a quarter in and you're you know, maybe gonna get upside down. What we need to do to make sure that we are viewed as stellar is we need to set business objectives and then we need to ask our manager, if I deliver against these objectives, does it put me in the pool to be the best performer on your team? And that person's going to say, well, you know, a lot of variables. Of course there are a lot of variables. We get that, right? But directionally. And then you need to manage that narrative and build that trust and manage that narrative and build that trust and manage that narrative all year long. Because then you are going to build the confidence for yourself. See, confidence and success comes from the inside out. It's not anything that any of us can give to you. You got to go inside yourself and figure out, why am I not confident? And I, you know, this whole thing of a fake it till you make it, that's definitely a component of it. But I have one word for confidence: preparation. So prepare. Think about what you're doing. Think about what you're going to say in that meeting. Don't go to another meeting ever again in your life and not have a very credible, value-added opinion to put on the table. Don't do that. Find your own space and take it up. Now, Miss Kendall.
Yes, ma'am.
You know, you rock. All you guys rock. I just love this panel. I do. Because it's just, you guys are real. You've done it. You're doing it. And I love it. All right. Now, you talked about the connection of authenticity to innovation.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's been your whole, you know, platform. Why?
So Trudy, when she said I talked about, because you all didn't hear from me yet, right? But we talked the other day. She asked, why is this topic so important? And for any of you who manage teams or business leaders, there's a compelling amount of evidence now. I'm not sure there was when I sort of believed in it.
Mm-hmm.
But that you're not going to be innovative and your company is not going to win, be competitive in the market unless you really have diverse teams. And it's not good enough to have diversity on your teams. It's about creating an inclusive culture where everyone can be themselves, right? So you have to enable authenticity for everyone you work with.
That's right.
And the only way to enable authenticity for the people you work with is if you're actually authentic yourself, which is a little scary to tell you the truth because, mm-hmm. you know, there are a few people here who know me, but I'm actually a very private person.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was a mid-level manager, I had to learn to actually, I had a great mentor who told me I had to be a little bit more vulnerable
mm-hmm.
because I guess, not, I don't know if I was scary, but I intimidated a few people. and because I would just plow through. I had a dad, I was an equestrian when I was growing up, and he would just keep making those fences higher and higher.
Wow.
And it would scare the crap out of me. And he would just say, throw your heart over and go after it.
Oh.
So So for me, coming up in the business world, though, as a first person from a corporate standpoint, yeah. I sort of just kept going because I figured what was the worst thing that was going to happen? Mm-hmm. I'd go back to Maryland and all would be good. But I was still very private. And someone said, you know, you really have to put yourself out there. Mm-hmm. That was difficult until I had two babies. And then, as I said to Trudy the other day on the phone, authenticity became a matter of survival. Frankly, for any of you who are spending time trying to be somebody else, I don't know how you do it. Because I was trying to manage two kids under the age of one, right? Mm-hmm. And was getting promoted at the same time and moving into a global job. I didn't have time to be anybody else other than myself, mm-hmm. right? Which sometimes I wasn't sure who that was when I got up in the morning with you. Is it a good day or a bad day? So it's a matter of survival. And what I learned when I became a much more authentic leader was that there were a lot more people who were willing to help me succeed yeah. and help us achieve our objectives. And I learned a lot from those people who came forward.
That's awesome. That's awesome. How many of you have children? Show of hands. Okay. How many of you have ever felt like, okay, I'm sitting in the meeting, okay, and it's 2 minutes after, I've already spent $20 because, you know, I'm behind. Do you know what I'm talking about?
$10.
That nervous yeah. anxiety that just absolutely floats up. Well, you know, you need to be authentically okay with saying, I hope that this is not an imposition, but you do recall that I suggested that I had a hard stop. And so I'm going to have to excuse myself. What I'll do is I'll circle back with you and we'll continue the conversation tomorrow. Can we do that? Yes, we could do that. And I'm sure you had to do that with two kids, right? Didn't you have situations like that?
Oh, yeah. So you asked, did anybody, remember she asked you to raise your hand, did anybody actually put something out there about yourself, like how you worked best? So when I took my first global role, my daughter was a year and a half, and my son was not quite 9 months.
Wow.
And I remember being scared. Remember that lack of confidence and just thinking, I don't know whether I can do this, but I knew it was important for my career. And I'm sitting there with this man who I know his wife works at home, and he has adult kids. And I go, and I know he likes to have early morning meetings. And I'm like, I just want you to know, knowing that I might not get the job. My intent is to use the child care center, and God bless J&J, we have child care centers in many mm-hmm. facilities, which mm-hmm. makes a huge difference. Mm-hmm. But I'm used, and so, you know, and I've got to drive, and it's important to me to take care of my kids. So my goal here is not to have mornings before 8 o'clock unless it is actually a crisis. And mm-hmm. if it's a crisis, and I was going to be his finance person, if it's a crisis, I'll be on the call. But you may hear my babies in the car seat,
and you just put it up.
Right? And I have to pick them up at the end of the day. And he was good, and he hired me anyway. And it took some while. I needed his admin assistant to help me train him.
Yeah.
On meetings because yeah. he liked to have those 7 a.m. meetings, you
right.
know. And
the admins are
you know,
so great.
Yeah. Make friend with the admins. And if you're admins, thank you.
Amen.
And so it took a while, but it worked out. In the end, actually, it changed. It made some cultural change in that group because it actually became permissible.
Yeah.
Not to be there at 7 a.m. in the morning.
I love what you're saying. Just this week, I had a conversation actually with a male. And men are becoming, look, this work-life balance, whatever you want to call it, effectiveness or whatever, it is no longer just females, okay? More and more men are actually taking their role. They should have been taking their role, but now they're really coming into responsibility for raising their own kids. They want to be a part. And I just had this conversation with this gentleman yesterday who was up for a position in finance, a promotion. And he came to me at the break in class and he said, you know, I want this position, but I don't know that I can do what comes along with this position. Mm-hmm. And so I said, well, what are you talking about? And he said, you know, my wife and I, she works and I work and we split the responsibility for the kids. And so, you know, not working on weekends is really important to me. And so I just looked at him and said, say that. But now, if you're not value added, if you don't have that brand reputation, then people are going to be like, but if you're a proven entity, who would say they're not going to support you? But we have to ask first, right? All right. So you also said when we were talking about
she takes good notes, apparently.
I try.
Very good.
You said I didn't aspire to be a CFO. all of my role models were white men who were gray.
They weren't my role models. That's who all the CFOs were.
That's who the CFOs were.
Clarification.
And so then you got asked to consider the role, and initially you were like, uh-uh. But someone said something to you that changed the game.
Yeah. So I had a great, he was my boss at the time, and he was talking to me about this. And I told him, oh, what if I don't want to be a CFO, right? And I actually did say something like, it's all these 50-year-old, I was probably 35 then. Seems so long ago. White men, you know, in their 50s, the gray suits and their blue suits, and very conservative, and didn't use their hands to talk like I do sometimes. And he looked at me and he said, but maybe that's why you should. Think about the difference that you could make. And so one thing I would say, one of my big takeaways for all of you is that the reason that you're in your job or the reason that you're being offered a position or some opportunity is because of who you are. And don't think that anybody wants you to give that up when you take another role. I frankly, in 30 seconds, I'll tell you, when I took my first big CFO role then, I actually, for the first 6 weeks, really wasn't myself. And luckily there was a guy who was one of my peers now on the board, and he pulled me aside and he said, where have you been? And I said, so this is why the brothers are so important, because there are more men that I was working with at the time, right? Mm-hmm. So they were the one calling me out. Where have you been? And I'm like, oh, well, I've traveled here, and I'm trying to meet everybody. He goes, no, where are you? And wow. And it was a minute, and I realized I'd been trying to be the guy who had the job before me, who I was nothing like.
Yeah.
And so it was a great wake-up call. And so since then, I've learned, and I try and remind everybody, you're there because of what you have to offer, not because of what you think they want you to offer.
That's awesome.
So be yourself.
Very good. Thank you very, very much. I appreciate that. So from a very practical standpoint, just to bookend what's happened so far, Kendall's last point about you're there because of what you bring, there's a considerable amount of research, particularly the research by Kenji Yoshino. If you haven't heard of him, you ought to Google him. But he talks about this concept called covering. And he says that all people cover to be accepted, including men, mm-hmm. but that women and people of color and gays the whole transgender cohort, that we cover so often that we lose our authentic selves, and in the process, we lose our confidence. And then once we lose our confidence, we start to shrink. We actually don't take up space anymore. We slither, like I was talking about before. So don't cover. Don't cover. You have the right to demand that, and not enough, Gail, to your point, you don't have to fight. This is not about me against you. What I loved, about Jenny's comments, you talked about caring about employees. And so I think that we all have to care, right? We don't have to fight. We just have to care. We have to care that we can show up okay, and we have to care that everybody else can show up okay. Does that make sense to you guys? So we're about to transition and give you the mics. I want to encourage you guys to use your voice now and open up. Well, if you please will come to a mic, that would be super. We would very much appreciate that. And so we're going to go ahead and start this part of our journey together. And so, ma'am, if you would be gracious enough to tell us your name and who you work for.
My name is Vicki Mitchell, and I work for Altera, now a part of Intel.
Yeah.
And my question is actually related to something that you said, Trudy, and all three of you actually said, which is, building, part of being your true self is having confidence to basically step out there and have that pride. Don't slither into the room. And you made a comment about fake it till you make it, which is actually something that I've heard personally a lot recently, because I had sort of a life-rocking event, right? Mm. And so faking it is inherently not authentic. So how do you sort of deal with that conflict of faking it for confidence but being authentic at the same time? How do you manage
that? That's really
good.
I'm going to ask you to start.
So there's some great research actually that Amy Cuddy's done from Harvard. She developed the Wonder Woman power pose.
Uh-huh.
You know, and
10X.
You know, the quick version of that is, you know, you stand with a power pose for 2 minutes, it changes your body chemistry, it increases your testosterone, lowers your cortisol and all of this stuff. So it's great. But the psychology behind that also is that you need to walk in the direction that you want to go. You need to dress for the job that you want to have. Mm-hmm. It's not being inauthentic. It's not tricking yourself. It's just stepping up and pushing yourself towards where you know you can go and where you know you have the capabilities to act in that particular way. So don't think of it as I'm faking it and I'm putting on a mask or something like that. What you're actually doing is just stepping up, leaning in, and walking in that direction where you know you have the capabilities and the
That's great counsel. Gail or Kendall, you guys want to add anything?
For me, it was giving myself time to learn. Sometimes they give you so much work to do, you can't possibly know everything. And so if you go in the room and you just admit, well, I'm just not prepared, that doesn't work, right? You allow the conversation to go on and you learn how to participate in that conversation with ease. And I think that's really important. That's not faking it. I think it's giving yourself time to learn and move ahead and be engaging without just coming in and just saying, well, I'm not prepared, so I can't.
Yeah, so I can't.
I'm not here, I'm absent today.
Yeah, the fake it's a state of mind, not babbling out bullshit and hoping that it flies,
I love
right?
it, I love it.
You know, it's about showing up and listening and being engaged and learning.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's awesome. They should probably make sure that it's clear that it's faking confidence, not competence.
Yes.
That's exactly
right.
That,
and so what you've got to do is pump yourself up and, you know, I'm bigger and badder and you know,
every day.
And more confident than they think. and that's what you're faking. You're not, when you read this, don't read it as changing your values or changing who you are or pretending, you know, for me to walk in and figure out that I know how to do IT, right? It's confidence.
What's interesting, and we'll close out this question and go to the next one, but what's interesting is if you observe particularly white male behavior, they can know not jack. Okay, not jack. And do you know what they'll say? You know, I have limited research in this area, but the little bit that I've read leads me to suggest blah, 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 blah. Right? And so they engage to the point of the panelists. They engage. So just put yourself out there. You know, we're never going to be 100% ready for any job. And that's something that the research shows, at least in my data collection for the hybrid leader. Women were like, okay, but I don't have this and I don't have that. That's not what men do. Men say, okay, I can learn this, to your point, Gail. I can learn this. I'm a quick learner. And so there you go. Okay? Thank you very much. Yes, ma'am. Welcome.
Thanks. This has been so great. Thank you all for all your insights.
You're so
my
awesome.
Name's Michelle, and I am from SAP.
Okay.
So my question is, in the last session, actually, someone mentioned something I thought was really profound, which she said was that women get promoted on performance and men get promoted on potential.
That's right.
And so it led me to think about it when you were talking about personal branding, because I find for myself personally, my career, that's always been a problem. I'm a very high performer, but it's how do you get someone to see all of the benefits of the diversity of what you bring to the table, not just as a woman, but also the diversity of my experience as a potential for something that's better in the company. And it might be some personal branding that maybe I need to work on, but I just wanted to kind of get input on what you thought about that. And also, all of you mentioned mentorship. And I think that's such a critical piece that's missing for a lot of women. And I'm wondering, how do you think you go about getting a mentor? So,
okay.
Those are some of my questions.
I actually think the second question kind of addresses the first.
Yeah.
Where you get that breakthrough through mentorship and sponsorship, right? So at our company, we've had great success finding individual women who have potential and assigning them a male sponsor. And that sponsor's responsibility is to open doors, you know, not just answer questions when they're asked, but actively push and find opportunities and, you know, get that woman promoted to the next level or the next opportunity. So it's around finding those allies, right? Any group that does not have power can't get the power until they can change the status quo by getting the people in power to become allies, right? And giving them a hand up. So how do you go about getting that mentor or that coach or that sponsor? You have to start by networking and, you know, gathering up all of your supporters and finding people who can be your champion. Do you have ideas around finding sponsors? Because I've heard that consistently, that finding good sponsors is really challenging.
Finding mentors tends to be much easier than finding a sponsor. And you guys should know that sponsors are not going to tell you that they're a sponsor unless you have an official program, okay? That's so that if you get crazy and do something that could damage their brand, they will drop you like a hot potato. I never knew you, okay? That's the reality. But sponsors are going to be motivated by your value. So you have to get close enough where they can actually see your work, right? Which is why we gotta speak up and volunteer and do things of that nature. I know you guys have
We have formal, but we have a lot of informal too, on our talent. What I would say is, I think sponsorship is earned, and if you don't think you have a sponsor, you better find out. My experience, at least in our culture, sponsors will tell you if you ask. You know, and what do sponsors do? They help you. When you're going for a job, you can pick up the phone and say, "Look, I've done really good work for you before. Will you advocate for me in this position?" So it's earned, but it's a long-term relationship, because once you have a sponsor, so they don't drop you like a hot potato, you're continuing to create value for them, and then it sort of enhances their brand over time as well, because they've supported you, you do well, that makes them look good, they found you.
Right?
She'll tell you, she knows who all the good people are at SAP that are good at cultivating talent, and that's part of their brand, right? It's part of mine, but not so. So I think you earn the sponsors, and so when you do a good job for someone, find out if they're an advocate for you for in other ways, and then continue to cultivate that relationship even if you no longer work for them. Find projects, special things you can do.
Yeah. My question to you would be, who notices your performance, right? Because sponsors are people who also need you.
That's right.
Right? When you're overperforming and you're delivering, they want you. They want to associate themselves with you.
Well, I think
so.
The reason I asked, though, and sorry to interrupt you, is because what it gets me is more work.
Then he's not a sponsor.
They recognize the work.
He's not a sponsor.
You're so good at this, we're going to give you more work.
That's not a sponsor. Ask for the promotion with the work.
Right.
And
so that's where I get stuck. Yeah.
Say no.
Oh, I've started doing that.
Yeah. So when, you know, this is another pattern for women. You know, we take on extra stuff over and over again without saying...
With hope.
Let's re-rack this. What's the priority? And, you know, so I'm expanding my scope. Can we talk about compensation? And can we talk about title? I mean, again, that goes back to my opening comments. Do you know if you're compensated fairly? Are you equipped to negotiate? Before we take this last question, show of hands, how many people feel like they have at least one sponsor? Okay, two? Okay, did you see what just happened? All right, so everybody who has one sponsor, you're in trouble. And let me tell you why. If that sponsor gets a to-go box is you're out, okay? If he or she gets a to-go box, you are starting again from scratch. So please hear us when we say you need cross-functional mentors, you need cross-functional sponsors. So I would set a goal, as you go back to your respective organizations, I would set a goal to have at least three or four mentors. That doesn't mean that you go to them all the time, but to Kendall's point, you nurture. It's a relationship. And what Jenny said is it's about trust, right? And then with the sponsor, you know, the same kind of thing, but you need more than one sponsor. And you guys, you need not just white male sponsors. In the world of tech, how many people are in the world of tech? Okay? There's four dominant groups in the world of tech. There are white men, there are Asian men, and then there are Indian men.
That's right.
And then there are white women. Those are the four dominant groups now in the tech industry. You need one from each cohort. Okay? That's the invitation to you. Yes, ma'am.
Can I just add one more thing?
Yes.
I think it's important that you manage yourself as you are your own company.
That's right.
You know, I mean, we talk about personal brand, but you take it further. You know, how, if you are, this is your business. You want to, you aspire to be CEO of a company. How would you do it? How would you plan it? Who are your stakeholders? You know, what product are you selling? You know, you really need to manage your career. And not, and if you don't manage it, you're never going to get promoted.
That's exactly
you're
right.
You're never going to get promoted. I don't care how hard you work. Because I've noticed people who work far less than I did. And they would be, they were executives before I reached that level. And I wondered why. And it's because they managed their careers. Every conversation, they probably went a little overboard because that's not what I'd like to do. But some people manage it more than they deliver work. I want to deliver value. But
those are the cray-crays.
I encourage you to do that.
But, you know, to Gail's point, it's a relationship economy. Okay? Every company in here is all about relationships. Don't forget it. So, you know, you need to make a practice. Here's a goal for you. On a weekly basis, eat lunch with somebody. Don't just sit at your desk and woof it down. Then you got indigestion. Then you're more stressed. Then you go home mad. And then, you know, okay, whatever. You know, make it a point to get out and connect. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Trudy.
You're welcome.
It's an amazing conversation. I work with women who struggle with self-doubt. I'm Alexandra Joy Smith. I work with women who struggle with self-doubt, lack of clarity around their whys, and all they want to do is contribute their gifts in the world and do that and be successful. Mm-hmm. So I'm a coach. I don't say that first because everybody's like, oh, another coach is in the room. Mm-hmm. So I'm interested, you know, a lot of what you've talked about today, one in HR would call the soft skills. For me, it's the hard skills. It's the enterprise you're building called your life. Oprah calls it your magnificent inner life, right? Mm-hmm. Where are organizations, where are HR departments with bringing, you know, us in? Not that I need more work, but like us in, or the conversation that we are, like our skill set. I had the luxury of starting off in the fitness industry a billion years ago, and I saw an industry grow. I mean, you wouldn't say to someone, we'll go exercise anymore. You would say a how-to, right? Like you give them the how-tos, and today you've gone through some how-tos, but you know, unless you have the skills and the technology, it's a technology, right? You said, go get your mission statement, go get your vision statement. And yeah, we can Google it, but we all know personal trainers work, right? Mm-hmm. So coaches work. So how do we as coaches and what we stand for get into organizations and make a difference?
At my company, we have very clear awareness of the value of coaches. We have a global coaching practice. 1% of our total employee population are licensed registered coaches. Mm-hmm. And so they're part of a pool, and you know, my department pays $10,000 to get them externally certified as a coach, and then they give back 5% of their time to the global coaching practice, and every employee can call and use that coach. And so my role is leading all the training and development and readiness for employees, and we teach mindfulness and yoga and exercise skills and personal branding and how to write a personal mission statement, and we have found that our employee engagement metrics, which then leads to productivity metrics, which leads to revenue and margin, mm-hmm. all that stuff has gone up tremendously as we have changed the curriculum. So I've been chief learning officer for just over 2 years. In those 2 years, we've changed the learning curriculum to be less technical. That's all still super important, but more around the whole authentic employee. And as we've done that, we've seen tremendous increase in engagement and productivity. People saying they're proud to work there. I mean, all these wonderful
just
things.
Trying to big switch.
Just bringing, how to bring your whole self, mind, body, spirit, heart, all of that. And so coaching and mentoring is a very important part of our culture.
Right. It's not the norm, though, right?
Yeah, so we're, you know, we could love to have an extended conversation offline. We're at the end, and I want to ask each of our panelists before they go to have one final takeaway. If they don't remember anything else that you said, Kendall, what do you want them to remember?
Be yourself. That's why you're in the job.
Be yourself. Gail?
Be strong, you know. Women are strong. Mm-hmm. Be strong. No matter what the situation is, be strong.
All right. And Jenny?
This is shameless self-promotion. I put 100 copies of my book on the table in the back. And my book, Data Driven, was number 7 of 11,000 business books written last year. They're signed copies. Please take one. Help yourself. That's my takeaway.
Okay. And my takeaway is
go
be brilliant. Thank you very much. Thank you, ladies. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Trudy. Ooh.